Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umet. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umet, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And good morning. We are all back from a wonderful weekend. We were able to take the weekend off, all of the doctors and myself, and we had a wonderful pre-recorded program with lots of new information. Hopefully you were able to enjoy that and some of our special phone calls, some of our favorite phone calls we like to feature as well. But we are all live back in the studio, and we're going to dive in a moment. But let me give you that phone number so you can be first with your questions for the doctors today, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. And we have a full house today. Of course, Dr. Mixon is traveling. Dr. Umet, where do you think he is? Do you think he's in Austria right about now?
I think he's done with Austria.
Okay. Yeah.
Wasn't that one of the earlier
trips? I can't remember.
He called me.
I thought he was in Amsterdam.
He was going to go all over.
He was.
Yeah.
And yeah, he called earlier this week. He was having a great time, still doing very well. Enjoying himself, but should be back next week.
Very good. So we'll hear about some of his adventures.
I hope he's
biking.
Having such a good time that he forgets to tune in.
Yeah, you know he's tuning in. It's probably it would probably be at the end of the day during dinner.
I'm thinking he should be enjoying dinner with his wife.
Yes.
I always said a Bandine. I don't think she'd allow it.
I know, Jerry, put down the radio.
That's right. Turn it off. It's okay. We got this. We've got Dr. Samira here.
Yeah, I hope he gets to eat some dinner, too.
But
I won't be surprised if he calls in.
That's right. He has called in.
Yes, he has.
He may surprise us. Yes. Dr. Michael Gilbert is here as from Northwest Vision Institute. So for all of those eye questions, he is here live in the studio, ready to take your questions and get you some information and some answers. We also have, from our Longevity Medical Clinic, Dr. Ken Pentland with us. Dr. Pentland. Very good morning to you as well. Okay, so we've got three doctors and me. So Dr. Umet, Dr. Pentland, Dr. Gilbert here in the studio. Be thinking of those questions you've been wanting to find out about maybe gastrointestinal. You're the gut guy, right, Dr. Ken? And then we have Dr. Gilbert with the eyes, Dr. Umet with all the other things that specialize in aging, those things that happen. But before we dive in to see what's been going on in medical news. Big announcement. We are so excited here. We were talking about this a few weeks ago. Dr. Umet, you were actually nominated for a very special accolade, the Top 50 Women We Admire. This is a national organization. They pick women of each state, and you were nominated for this. And now we know you have received, you are one of the 50 top women we admire for Washington State. Yay! This is so, it's so
no
huge.
Surprise.
This is huge.
It's hard to be really excited because she knew, you know, we've known this for a long time.
So this is not news. Not news, but so exciting. Of course, Dr. Umet is our director at the medical director at Longevity Medical Clinic. Also, Bella Medica is on our show, Leading Edge Medicine, each week, and her own program, Beautiful You, which focuses on Bella Medica and all of the wonderful things they do there to keep you beautiful as you age. Yes, so congratulations. I love this.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Oh.
I'm, honored and humbled. I remember when the first emails started coming in, I actually ignored them for the longest time.
You're like, what is this? What?
I had no clue what it was. I didn't recognize the name. I didn't know the group. And then I got an email. Did you get my last email? Did you read my last email? And they kept coming. And then finally I said, I got to find who this is.
Yeah.
She's persistent. And sure enough, I was surprised. And anyway, here we are.
Wonderful.
So, no idea why or how or
because you are one of the women we admire, and because, of course, everyone here at Longevity, we've been admiring you, your patience, and I know our listeners love you, and thank you for what you're doing in the medical community, and for helping us age, I'm not going to say gracefully, but the best that we can, and look the best that we can, and feel the best that we can as we age, because that's something that everybody who's listening, men and women, I mean, we all go through that. That's something we can connect with.
You're so right about that, you know, more so now than ever before. Jerry started this years and years ago, decades ago, but today it's more relevant, and it's more relevant in the younger population. And it warms my heart when I hear young people ask me, what should we be doing? Now, I know they're young. They probably don't even have an idea.
Or a wrinkle.
Well, they definitely don't have those. But, you know, the young ones want baby Botox.
Yes.
And it's interesting. They're starting because they don't want to get the lines at all. But to hear that they are engaged and they want to know, okay, how many times a week should I be exercising? Or, you know, can I eat this and get away with it? Or is nighttime a good time to eat or not? How much intermittent fasting should I do? Just simple questions. That to me is warming, because I know I didn't ask those questions.
No, they were like, we'll deal with it when we get there, right?
And when
I knew I was immortal.
Yes.
right?
We're going to stay 20 forever with the metabolism of a flea, right?
But there is a buzz about it, and so it's nice that the younger age group is intrigued, at least. Whether they do something about it or not is hard at that stage. But that's the stage to begin.
Yes.
If you are proactive in prevention at that time, you watch what you eat, you exercise well, you build up the reserves in your bones, you're going to be less likely to have problems. So it's the same as, you know, you may have the genetic code. We're very good at identifying what your personal genetic code is, but expression of that genetic code is really up to you. And so that's the message that I always want to give everybody. And then the publishment of the new publication this week about the new Alzheimer's drug just proves that. So, you know, Leqembi is the new drug that has been approved this last week for Alzheimer's dementia. And again, it's interesting. The drug reduces plaque buildup. Beta amyloid plaque is what it attacks. And they said that it helps in early Alzheimer's dementia patients. So mild cognitive decline. So when you go to see a neurologist or a specialist that gives you a diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment, they can then ask you if you would like to try this drug. There are lots of pros and cons with the drug, as you can only imagine. It does cost $26,500 per year. Gosh. Medicare will cover 80%.
Wow.
Still, there is a cost involved. And I think what some of the neurologists were pointing out in the writings I was reading is that there are additional costs. You know, with the drug, there will be additional scanning, transportation. It's an IV drug, so you have to go to a doctor's office once every 2 weeks to get the medication. And also the continuous follow-up. Any physician who chooses to prescribe and use this drug will have to register in a registry and will have to be following his patients closely, and they will monitor them. So not every neurologist will want to do this. So you will have to choose a provider, and everybody has access to it, but not everybody may choose to use it.
Okay.
So there is an expense, there is an access. And then the big other thing is, does it really help? So they in their trial, they showed a 27% improvement in mild cognitive, not in delayed or late Alzheimer's dementia. But there's a huge side effect profile as well.
Okay.
So the main side effects are swelling in the brain, and they said it was mild or inconsequential in most patients, and symptoms resolved quickly or over time. And the second one was a brain hemorrhage.
Mm.
So people that are on blood thinners, either for atrial fibrillation or for some other reason, will not be good candidates. And also late onset, like I said, and any risk for a bleed will not be a good candidate. They also noticed that people who have the APOE4 gene, which, by the way, all longevity patients know what genome they carry. If you have the APOE4 gene, then the likelihood, both of them, both from mom and from dad, to APOE4, then the likelihood of the side effect is much higher for you, in which case they may not choose to give you the medication.
Okay.
Because they don't want you to have a bleed, and they don't want you to have a brain swelling. And there is a sense, there was a little bit of mortality too, so the FDA does warn that not only is it high side effect, they did, some people died from the medication use. So yes, very exciting news. But you know, when I heard this, my first thought went to the 2013 study published by Dr. Dale Bredesen, where he talked about the end of Alzheimer's, and he also talked about how to prevent progression of disease in early onset. And the way he described it is like it's a tin roof over your head with 30 different holes, and what you're trying to do is plug the holes. So dementia is not just because of beta amyloid plaque buildup. It's choices you make. Mm. It's your health, your diet, your nutrition, your supplementation. It's toxins, it's exposures. And when you identify what may be contributing to your memory loss and you work on reducing those toxic exposures, you can improve the outcome. And so I like to focus on it with a functional medicine approach. For my postmenopausal women that tell me they are having word-finding difficulties, and their estrogen level is really very low, and they started depleting their estrogen in their 30s, I like to start with just replacing estrogen and seeing what kind of an impact it has on them. More and more lately, we're actually hearing that the same thing happens in men. As their testosterone levels depleting, they are also depleting estrogen, which might be contributing to their memory loss. Mm. Certainly, the hormonal loss as they age does contribute to bone loss as well. So a lot of other things you can address with hormone replacement. And along with that, you know, measured supplementation and replacing what is really objectively deficient and help improve absorption. So Dr. Pentland is here, and we can talk about gut health and how to help improve absorption of nutrients. So it's not just, am I taking the right amount? Am I taking enough of it? It's like, how are you going to help your body absorb what you are taking is very critical. Remember, the gut is considered the brain of the body.
Yes.
So the gut microbiome is very important. And the more we know about it and the more we take care of it, it will impact on our overall health and wellness. So it has been an exciting week.
Good. Yes.
And, you know, it's been, I know Jerry's not here, but, you know,
we still have medical updates and wonderful things happening. And in fact, we have several phone callers on the line. So we're going to find out some more medical updates with Dr. Gilbert and also Dr. Pentland in just a few moments. But why don't we go ahead and dive into our first call? It is a call related to the eyeballs.
How exciting.
Yes. And if you have a question.
As exciting as
Alzheimer's and
dementia and what have you. Now
yes.
Let's talk real medicine.
Okay. No. 800-465-8770. We'll quickly get the question, go to break, and then come back and find out what's going on with that, all right?
Very good.
Marie in Arlington, good morning.
Morning,
this is
Marie.
Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning. It's my lucky day that Dr. Gilbert is here.
Yes.
I'd like to
my
know
lucky
your
day.
Thoughts about thymosin beta-4 eye drops, and I'd like to know if they treat the meibomian gland damage as well as the eye irritation, and your thoughts on the product.
Unfortunately, there are no drops, zero, that treat my meibomian gland dysfunction. And So the quick answer is no. And the reason is the absorption from drops is very poor into the meibomian gland system. It doesn't have good vasculature, so oral or systemic medications don't treat it well, although there are two antibiotics that can influence the inflammatory profile of the inflammatory environment around the glands, but not, interestingly enough, not because they're antibiotics. It's happens to be a side effect. So the antibiotic dose is actually subtherapeutic for infections for these two antibiotics, but they have shown over longer term treatments to help the meibomian glands, but no drop therapy is really helpful.
Dr. Gilbert, is there any problem in using these antibiotics long-term then?
Drops? Let's be specific. Drops, no. Well, let's see. So two different things. The antibiotics I just
mentioned.
Are they
oral?
Doxycycline.
Oh, it is doxy. Okay,
doxy,
so it's oral doxy.
Low dose, like 24 to 50 milligrams a day.
Okay.
Right? For months.
Okay. And
because it's a very slow benefit.
Okay.
So you have to be on it. There was one study that showed that if you do a higher pulse, 1,000 milligrams a week of azithromycin, you would get a similar effect over about a 3-4 week period. So that's certainly a lot less than asking someone to do, 4 months of doxycycline with all the side effects. But that was a small study. I'm really interested to see some follow up on that.
Okay.
But our ability to treat those glands is not great. One internal treatment works from actually the inside of the gland, and that's the omega-3s.
Yeah.
However, omega-3s nor the antibiotic treatments, nothing. Omega-3s don't act like Drano. You don't take them and it cleans out the system.
I know. Why not, Dr.
Yes, ma'am. Well,
you haven't invented this yet.
I have people who ask me every week, how long am I going to have to take this?
Yes.
Well, I've been on it for 15 years. And every year, I hope that someone will come up with something better.
Yes. But there are some things you can do to help with the meibomian gland. Should we talk about that after the break?
Absolutely.
Okay, Marie, you hang on. We will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine and more of your calls. Susan, we'll get to you. Bill and John has an eye question as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Umat, Dr. Gilbert, and Dr. Pentland. I'm Lynette. We'll be right back.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.
Papaya, papaya.
And make believe it came from you.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. Good morning. The sun is shining. It should be another beautiful weekend. Love that. We're glad to be here in the studio. We have Dr. Samira Umat, Dr. Ken Pentland, and also from Northwest Vision Institute, the eye guy, Dr. Michael Gilbert. And Dr. Gilbert, you were talking with Marie about those meibomian glands, what we can do.
So this turns out to be very important because the vast majority of visits to the eye office are a because related to dry eyes. Redness, irritation, fluctuation in vision, people who can't read, people who can't read very long. A lot of symptoms that people may attribute to some other condition are primarily dry eyes. And the number one reason, 85, depending on which study, 85 to 90% of the patients who come in for dry eye problems, it's the meibomian gland system. And we haven't known that all my practice lifetime.
No, Dr. Umat and I, we know about those.
Who
has the worst, Dr.
Right, well, that would be a HIPAA violation.
Yeah, we can't do that.
It's very common, and I'm a little passionate about it because it really got me about 15 years ago before we fully understood it. And so I have passionately looked at each incremental insight and adopted those that work and look forward to the insights that have changed the direction that we've taken. The things that can make a difference in the meibomian glands. First of all, really the most important thing, I think, is to understand that your expectations for improving the gland system will depend on how much damage is done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Within the last week, I saw an 18-year-old who came in
wow.
for eye symptoms. And when I looked at her gland, she had an 80-plus percent loss
wow.
of the gland
wow.
systems. Now, Mom said, you know, I may have to take TikTok away from her. And I said, there are social reasons why you should take TikTok away
yeah,
from her as well.
Really.
But this can, you know, this is becoming a real serious mm. problem for the younger generations that spend so much screen time. Why? Mm. Because these glands only release the protective comfort tears to the surface of the eye when, only when, you blink.
Mm-hmm.
And our normal blink rate of 20 times a minute goes down to about 2 times a minute when we're on screens.
Wow. Oh, boy. Because we're concentrating so hard?
Because we're concentrating. Reading computer. The worst is desktops, mm-hmm. but most of the screen time is close. Reading text, hard text, is no better. We still stare. Television. Mm. Driving is the only one that's on the list that isn't a screen time, but many have Teslas now with big screens, so maybe.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding.
I believe everything.
So, I don't have a Tesla with a big screen.
Not have one. So,
Mason does.
Yes, he does.
Indeed,
so,
he does.
So number one, we have to figure out how bad the damage is to know what our expectations should be and how and the best approach to it. One of the things that happens to those glands as you stop using them is the secretions go from liquid, crystal clear, light, like WD-40, to paste grease.
Oh.
And sometimes nothing moves out of the glands, and then the glands start to atrophy.
Mm-hmm.
So as that gets thicker and thicker, it's heat sensitive. So one of the things that you can do in that interim phase while we're trying to save what you got is do hot compresses. But the glands live on the back side of the eyelid. So that quick, you know, washcloth for 18 seconds and I'm done doesn't work. Backside of the eyelid means that we have to have a gradient, so it has to be pretty hot, and it takes the first 5 minutes to get the glands hot.
Mm, okay.
Then you start the treatment. So doing longer heat, as hot as you comfortably can, because the whole goal is to melt those greasy secretions. And then as soon as you've done that heat treatment, you want to do firm, big squeeze blinks, because that's the natural mechanism, the physiologic, normal release of those tears, so it gets that pump started for the day.
Mm.
So doing some hot compresses. Omega-3s help because it gradually improves, it decreases the melting point of those tears over time. Mm. But it's a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
So increasing the omega-3 oils in your diet, hot compresses, and depending on the amount of damage, getting those glands cleared out so we're back to normal glands as much as you have left. So those are some of the
things. Those are some things.
If there's severe damage, then you may want to consider the pulse therapy of antibiotics to try and turn around toward a better production of tears. Yeah.
So the hot compresses actually sound pretty nice.
Yes.
Comforting.
Yes.
And they're the commercial eye bands or something you can put on your eye. A mask.
Okay.
A heating
right.
pad. That's what I have.
Right.
Yeah. Mine's pink with little cat ears
and,
on it.
So some of the beaded masks, but usually the ones you toss in the microwave will stay hot for about 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And we need that second 5 minutes, right? Because
okay,
the first 5 minutes is getting heat to the glands.
Okay.
The second 5 minutes is doing the job, mm-hmm. right? Is heating the actual gland structure.
Mm.
So so some of those you want to toss in the microwave for that extra 5 minutes.
Sure.
There are electric ones that you can find on Amazon.
That's what I use.
However, you have to be careful that they, oftentimes the electron or the wiring inside makes them stiffer, so they don't come in full contact with the eye from corner to corner.
Okay.
Someone with a more prominent nose may be skipping part of the surface of the eyelid. So make sure that whatever you're doing
right in there.
Is in full contact with the eyelid corner to corner. For that full time.
Mm. Mine has a timer on it, too, so I go for 15, and it feels so good.
Now, some people get discouraged that they have to go so long. So
it's relaxing, especially at the end of the day.
I tell them, you know, in the morning, do something in the morning.
Okay.
2 minutes is better than zero.
Right.
But if you really want to improve this, then do that hot compress. Mm. And I think, you know, many people will find that that 10-minute heat treatment at night before you go to bed can make a huge difference the next day.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So there is some carryover. It's not like just for that few minutes.
So it'll decrease the tearing of the eyes?
Yes.
Mm. Okay. Okay. And then the antibiotics. Sorry, I'm hung up on that a little bit. When I talked about the drops, I was thinking about antibiotic eye drops, but you're saying the treatment is oral antibiotics.
That's right. It's not an there's no infection.
Okay.
There's not a bacterial problem. Sometimes there can be bacteria, staph bacterial blepharitis on the surface, anterior blepharitis, but much more commonly a problem is posterior. And that, so that anterior, the crusting that you can get, that can be associated with, typically with staph bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
But the posterior blepharitis, that is the one that's most common that causes a dry eye problem with high frequency, is not infectious. It's inflammatory. Mm-hmm. So oral or topical antibiotics don't help because of an antibiotic component, but rather as a side effect of that oral antibiotic, or just those two classes.
So people who have the wake up with a lot of eye crusties, right? That's you're saying that's maybe a staph.
Well, those are coming. That can be staph, or it can just be those thicker secretions that aren't. The secretion should be crystal clear, right?
Uh-huh.
Every time you blink, that's the tear system that keeps your vision clear and your eyes comfortable. It's the lubrication component of the tears. Now, if you and I had been there at creation, we would have said, no. We got to make this automatic, not every time you blink. That's dumb.
Okay.
But that's the way it works.
All right. Marie, this is a lot of great information about your meibomian glands. Is that helpful for you on some things you can do, Marie?
That is. I'd like to know what doctor thinks about the TB4 drops, though, themselves.
A reasonable lubricant, but I know of no effectiveness towards the surface disease.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Marie.
But instead of... You were asking about topical antibiotics. Topical steroids can help.
Oh, yeah.
Because as the eye gets dry, as we have this deficiency of lubrication, the surface cells are traumatized.
Right.
And that's what causes the redness, the irritation, the symptoms that we all associate with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, you know, you can use the steroid, low dose, you know, one of the really lower dose topical steroids to reverse some of those symptoms. But of course, unless you simultaneously address the cause,
right?
As soon as you finish the steroid course,
absolutely
comes back,
it comes right back.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it helps, but then patients come in and say, you know, my doctor gave me the steroid drops, but as soon as I stopped, well, that's because you didn't treat the problem.
Okay. There we go. Okay, talking the eyes today. And we have Dr. Umat and Dr. Pentland here as well to take your questions at 800-465-8770. On the line, we have Susan calling in from Monroe. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Good morning to you all. I just had a quick question. Wanted to know what types of foods and supplements should I take to eliminate ridges in my fingernails?
Ridges in your fingernails. I think the question is what causes the ridges in the fingernails. Are you deficient in anything? Do you have iron deficiency anemia?
Not that I know of, no. No, I don't think I've been tested for iron deficiency. So that could be a problem.
Yes, it can. And sometimes infections can cause ridges, fungal infections, chronic fungal infections of the nail bed can cause some ridges. So I think I think the treatment would really depend upon what the diagnosis is.
There's a lot of things there are a lot of things you can diagnose by looking at somebody's fingernails, at least to get some idea of what's going on, besides just their sort of more prominent symptoms. But for the sort of lengthwise ridges that people often see that is more common with aging, one of the things that may be helpful is just getting more healthy protein in the diet.
Mm.
That's from what I've read, that seems to be one thing that may be helpful.
Okay, so no magic supplement or thing. Probably getting diagnosed why the ridges are there, maybe, right?
Well, yeah, you know, the ridges are actually a symptom.
Okay.
They're a symptom of something going on. And so you really want to have somebody take a look. And, you know, unfortunately on the radio, I can't take a look.
Would that be where you could start?
Absolutely, they would. Okay. And then once you have an appropriate diagnosis, that's when you can begin some treatment. So, you know, just to say, okay, well, buy some over-the-counter
biotin gummies
is not the right way to go.
Yeah. Okay. Is that helpful for you, Susan?
I mean, I remember when medical school training, right, we were taught about clubbing.
Right, of
and
course.
And COPD.
Classic.
And So we don't do that anymore. A doctor has never looked at my hands and said, oh, you may or may not have clubbing.
Okay. All right. Susan, thank you so much for your call, okay?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. We're going to take a quick break here and back with more of your questions. Okay, Bill, we're going to talk with you in just a moment and then an eye question from John. And if you have a question for any of the doctors for Leading Edge Medicine, here is the number to call. We are live in the studio, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in line. With a 9-foot grin, a 10-piece band, and a 12-foot chorus line.
We're back with Leading Edge Medicine. As all of us in the studio are looking at our nails. And,
and I love it. Men and manicures.
Yes.
Right. Have you ever had a manicure, Dr.?
I have.
Oh, you have?
I have.
How are you?
There you go.
I am impressed.
Good job. I just did mine yesterday.
Okay. My mother was a hairdresser.
Oh,
and
okay.
I used to, growing up, you know, it's a small business. We're a hardworking family. So for years, I did the janitorial. We decorated Christmas. I do the windows, you know, paint the walls. And it's a small business. And there was one of the people she employed did nails. And when I was in there working one day, she said, "You want to have your nails done?" And I stopped. When you say done, what do you mean done?
What do you mean by that?
What does it mean to have your nails done? Done.
Yes.
I'll just clean them up. And
you?
I thought, you know, okay. All right, as long as we're not going pink or something, yeah. Right?
Well, I've seen many men with painted nails these
days.
That's right,
and they are loving the foot massage.
My grandkids, the guys, do the... God bless my kids who allow these grandkids to paint their nails. That's all fine. The girls get to do it, so the boys get to do it.
And I'm
thinking, how do I handle this?
Yeah.
No, Grandpa doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You can paint Grandpa's toes.
Wise Grandpa.
But then Grandpa's putting socks and shoes right back on.
Grandpa doesn't do that.
Okay, and our engineer is going, hey, he does a manicure every week. Wonderful.
Seriously? Yes. Good for you, man.
Good for you. And, you know, I hear with my friends that do this, I know our other producer, Mark, will go in with his wife and have his feet, you know, because they'll massage your feet and get your nails all trimmed up and wonderful. Yeah.
I took my husband in for a pedicure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the pedicure,
I think it was
last
year.
Okay.
And it was the first time he had ever had one. And he enjoyed it.
Yes.
But he's not been back.
Okay. It's like, okay, I'll do this. So there you go. It's all good. And hey, good nails and then you start feeling good and looking good.
And if you have that done, you can't see the ridges. So
that's
maybe
right.
That's
there
the answer
go.
To
see,
the ridges.
Dr. Umat and I are always comparing and we have the
color
sparkly.
It up. You can't see anything underneath.
You guys are great. I always check out the nails. I mean,
yes, you're right.
Hers are fancier than mine.
I do have a fancy one. This is in honor of my mom. So we've got some flowers going on our fingers here. But Kimberly at Dr. Gilbert's office at Northwest Vision.
Yes.
I always check out her beautiful manicures. We're always comparing. Yeah. So it's one of my
favorites. I remember I had gotten a manicure when I was in my internship.
Yes.
I had just gone on vacation, got a manicure the last day of vacation and came in to do my first day of surgery rotation. And the head nurse looked at my nails and she said, first go and clear all the nails and cut them.
There you
and
go.
I looked at her. I was horrified. I said, I just got these done yesterday and I'm only here for 15 minutes. She goes, if you want to scrub.
Oh, boy. Ouch. My nurse friend had to do that. She was always so jealous. She couldn't have color on her nails. Okay, well, we've got lots of callers here today for Leading Edge Medicine, and we would love to talk with you, too, about manicures or pedicures. 800-465-8770. Bill, thank you for waiting and letting us talk about fingernails for a little bit. Bill, talking and calling in from Bremerton. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
I talked to you a few weeks ago about lower back pain that I had when I was on senescent cell therapy. It did go away after I finished my regimen. And I wanted to give you the good side of it. I did not enjoy the lower back pain. I never have lower back pain, and I did all during that time. But I am down 12 pounds from, you know, what I was, which is why I took it, was to speed up some weight loss, and I've held at that lower weight. So that's the good side of it. But I did not like the lower back pain.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you have dropped the weight and that you're feeling better. But the senescent cell therapy should not have caused the back pain, though. Is that what happened to you?
Well, that's the only thing I can attribute it to the minute I started it.
You said, I remember your phone call now. Now I remember your phone call. That was the only change you had made, and you started getting back pain. Wow.
Yeah, and it went away when I quit. So I don't know how else you...
Yeah. So tell me now, what other benefits, if any, did you notice other than the weight loss?
I don't know that. I mean, I feel really good since I've been going to longevity. You know, I mean, I'm 80 years old and I'm you know, in good shape. I swim a mile and a half, three times a week. And, I work full time. I'm doing construction. And I'm still climbing on roofs and doing all the things you do in construction.
Doing all the things.
Wow.
Way to go, Bill.
Wow. Well, just be careful is all I'll say. I'm happy that you're doing well. I'm sorry about the back pain. Still don't know why you had it, but good to know.
Yeah.
Gone
now.
Yeah. And then maybe, you know, you might want to think about rapamycin or something else next time around. But definitely discuss it with your doctor and see if there are any other options for you, Bill. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't tell you an interesting thing about fingernail painting. I had an accident in 2009, a bad accident, which sat me in the hospital for quite a while. Well, right before the accident, I had been removing some glue-down carpet from the floor, and we were using a chemical to get the stuff off the floor. And so I was down on my hands and knees, and I had tennis shoes on, and the chemical, you know, wetted the tennis shoes and obviously got to my feet. And at the end of the day, when I took off my socks, I noticed they were white socks and they had a red stripe across the toe of the sock. But I noticed they were totally white. The red had gone away. So the chemical from the floor removal stuff had taken the dye out. And then I looked at my toenails, and they were beautifully colored red.
Oh!
Every toenail.
Oh, goodness me.
Wow.
And so I had a toenail painting that would not chip. It just had to wear out. And then I had that accident, and I went in the hospital. And I was so embarrassed to show my feet to the nurse.
I'm a construction guy with nice toenails.
Is that a feature of the chemical? Was it on the bottle?
Yeah, really. One of the side effects.
Like a commercial opportunity.
Yeah. Beautiful nails. Yes.
I thought if I could patent this, I could make a fortune because women would love it. I mean, it was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it was, you know, you didn't have to worry about anything. The nail was just... totally impregnated.
Good to know.
There you go, Bill.
Take care of those nails.
Yes. That's so good.
All right. Thanks for sharing your story, Bill.
Oh, thank you so much, Bill.
All right. And thanks for the feedback. You take care now, okay?
Yes. Very good. 800-465-8770 to get on the show today. And we do have some callers waiting here. John calling in from Vancouver with an eye question. Good morning, John.
Hi, John.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm sorry I got you on my speakerphone and I can't see how to get it off. But anyway, I have...
If you can't see, come on in. We can fix that.
I've had macular degeneration since about 96. So I've had lasers and shots. No help for me, but my daughter just turned 58. And she was identified with drusen. I'd like to know what is that, and is there any treatment for it?
Of course. Really important that she pay close attention to this and optimize treatment.
Wow, what is that, Dr. Gilbert?
So drusen are age-related changes to the retina, and they are statistically associated with macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. They are the earliest dry form of macular degeneration. You can have drusen and absolutely no change in vision. Hmm. And that's why it's important, especially with family history, but even without family history, to get your eyes checked when it's starting in your 50s on an annual basis to screen for changes like drusen, which have no symptoms, changes like glaucoma, which have no symptoms. Drusen then can progress to macular degeneration. And when you've had injections, that means you've had what's called wet macular degeneration. What's wet about it is blood vessels. So the dry means just those aging changes. Drusen are like instead of the surface of the retina being mirror smooth for good images, it gets lumpy and bumpy. And those lumps and bumps can predispose to new blood vessels, weak blood vessels, suddenly starting to grow and leak. And that tissue does not tolerate leakage, so that's why you end up with permanent or the threat of permanent vision loss from macular degeneration. Fortunately, when it gets to that stage, injections, that area has exploded in terms of our ability to treat it. And I'm glad you've benefited from that. We have a retina specialist on our team, happens to be my son, who did his retina work at Harvard and then came to work for me and does our injections for us. But I often end up treating people who have drusen, which is the first stage before you need those injections. And so your real question is, if you have drusen, what can you do to decrease the likelihood of going on to that next stage of macular degeneration? And there are a couple of things. Number one, it has been shown that diet influences progression. So diets rich in dark leafy vegetables, spinach, kale, fresh fruits and vegetables. The most important thing is many years ago, the NIH did two very large, very powerful studies that showed a group of vitamins taken together can statistically decrease the risk of macular degeneration. And that's not proprietary. There are proprietary forms, but the formula that they use is established by that FDA research. The most recent one, the one to look for now, is called AREDS, A-R-E-D-S, and that stands for Age-Related Eye Disease, and it should have a 2 on it. And if it doesn't have a 1 or a 2, then if you look at the label and it has lutein in it, then that's the one you want. The AREDS 1 did not have lutein, and the formulation change in AREDS 2 has been shown to be more effective.
Now, people who don't have a deficiency of lutein or, you know, any of the AREDS nutrients, if they took AREDS as a preventative measure?
You know, there has never been... looking at blood levels of these for deficiency was never part of the study. They just looked at supplementation.
Okay.
And if, for instance, the doses of zinc and copper are way beyond physiologic. So there, it's not looking at replacing.
So if his daughter had gone in and gotten a completely normal exam, but knew that dad had macular degeneration, would she then start the AREDS now or not?
That is a great question, and it has been addressed by the NIH research. They looked at that group of patients that has family history, but no findings, right? And unfortunately, the AREDS supplementation did not change their future incidence of disease.
Wow.
Interesting.
So that was a little discouraging.
Yeah.
The other thing from that study is fish oil.
Ah.
And unfortunately, they're not very prescriptive about what level of fish oil is optimal. So we just have to kind of make a guess. But you should be on some, she should, and probably you, should be on some fish oil. The AREDS vitamins is a regimen, 2 small capsules twice a day. It's over the counter, very affordable, get it anywhere. My favorite brand is called PreserVision. And that's because it is the company that made it for the NIH, and it's FDA supervised because of they're also making prescription drugs. So it's a good formulation. But as long as you're getting AREDS 2 and fish oil, and then monitoring for change, then I think she's doing what she ought to do.
There you go. Great advice. Is that helpful, John?
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. The second question I have is for the GI doctor.
Oh, good. And we are going to go to him. Yep, we will take a quick break. So, John, you hang on, and then we will have you ask that to Dr. Pentland in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Oh, boy. Memories. That brings back old rock and roll DJ days when that song wasn't a classic and now it is.
You know, I recently watched the movie Elvis.
Oh, yes.
It turned out to be nicer than I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had a lot of good information there and things I didn't know, his influences and why he did what he did and why his eyes always looked amazing because an actor friend of his had told him, put just a tiny bit of eyeliner on your eyes and in the corner to make your eyes pop in all those black and white pictures. Right. And it's like, okay. You learned a lot of little tidbits on that.
And he was doing hot compresses for
his meibomian glands. You know it. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette Morgan. Glad to be with you and 3 very amazing doctors. The award-winning Dr. Samira Umat. I get to say that all day, and I'll tell you why if you just tuned in. And Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute. We also have Dr. Ken Pentland here. He is our gut specialist. And John, you mentioned you had a question for Dr. Pentland. Go ahead.
I do. Please. About 1 month ago, I started having diarrhea. I call my doctor. We go in, get a stool test. No problem. If it continues, call back. Well, it is off and on. And yesterday it started on. And so I called the nurse who's operating on Saturdays at the hospital, and she said, take Imodium. She said, if a stool test showed no problem, take Imodium. Does that sound good?
That's a good question. So first of all, in the diarrhea that you're having, the bowel movements, is there any blood?
No.
Okay.
I've had people who can see check that, and they say no.
Good. And before the diarrhea started, was there a meal that you could associate to that, or was there anything that you can attribute it to?
No, sir. I have not changed anything.
Okay.
The only thing I note is I have a real pass of gas first.
Uh
before the diarrhea starts.
Right. Okay. And have you had anything like this in the past? Is it recognizable?
No, sir. I haven't. Okay. I'm approaching 90 now, but so I have not had anything like this.
Yeah, so the thing with diarrhea, sometimes it's a better out than in situation, right? And so Imodium isn't always the best solution for that. If it's something that's trying to leave the body, you don't necessarily want to keep it in.
Well, how many bowel movements are you having in a day?
Three.
Wow. And how many were you having before all of this started?
One.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a significant change, and it's soft and runny and watery?
All watery, yes.
All watery, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
And is there a lot of gas with that as well?
It's about 30 minutes to an hour after I eat.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then did you change any medications, any supplementation, any antibiotics you were put on right before this started?
No, ma'am.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the stool test that you had, if I'm not mistaken, was probably sort of the standard clinic stool mm-hmm. test, looking for the sort of 15 things like C. diff, E. coli, Salmonella, Giardia. And a lot of times when I worked at a GI clinic, those were not the typical culprits for chronic kind of symptoms that you're showing here. So you probably want to get a more comprehensive stool test that's going to look a little deeper, look at the digestive quality, things like pancreatic elastase, beta-glucuronidase, maybe calprotectin, and look at other kinds of dysbiosis that may be going on that you'd have to culture the stool a little bit longer to do that.
Hey, John, do you have any abdominal pain and cramping?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I would probably keep hydrating. The risk I worry at your age is that you'll get dehydrated. Hey, Ken, what would you recommend increasing fiber intake at this time?
Actually, that fiber would be a good thing.
Yeah.
But sometimes also if you're having significant diarrhea, well, replacement of electrolytes like Samir said, but also sometimes activated charcoal is maybe a better consideration than Imodium because it does help staunch the flow, but it also acts like a sponge to trap things that are trying to get out so they don't get recirculated.
Mm.
And the dose for that would probably be something like 2 or 3 capsules.
Activated charcoal?
Capsules, yes.
Wow, I just think of charcoal briquettes, but it's called reactivated charcoal.
Well, activated charcoal is what people activated often take charcoal. For poison.
Oh, okay.
So it's a detoxifying agent.
Okay.
And it's available at supplement stores. And as long as you get, you know, any reputable brand will do. And yeah, 2 or 3 capsules twice a day, away from any food or other pills, because it's a sponge.
All right.
Okay, John, so a little bit of activated charcoal. Make sure that you stay well hydrated, my friend, and especially now that the weather is really hot. And then if the symptoms persist despite this, please go back for a more involved GI test. And I think a naturopathic physician, certainly Longevity offers it, but there are other providers in the area that will do a more detailed stool analysis to look at enzymes and things that can tell you what is really happening in the gut rather than just taking an Imodium, which may not be the best solution. Mm. Okay?
Thank you very much for your time and your expertise. You have a great day.
Very
you
welcome.
Too, John.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for that. Now, Dr. Pentland, we have just a few minutes before our next break, and you're excited about something that is making medical news, right?
You know, let's stick to gut health for a few minutes.
Okay, yeah, with the
topic
gut health.
Was gut, because he's really an expert in gut health.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about.
He has helped many of my patients as well. So, Ken, when you approach somebody that is having diarrhea, I mean, talk to us about the 3 Ds of gut health.
Ooh.
What is involved in your evaluation? How do you help your patients?
Well, so that's many good. Times when patients come in with something like diarrhea, it's oftentimes it's a post-infectious situation where they had some kind of food interaction. They had a food poisoning incident. They were traveling.
Sure.
They had something that didn't agree with them, and they had some symptoms, and then they recovered from that. But then shortly after, symptoms came back, and they didn't go away.
Right. Ah.
And then they'll go to their regular physician. They'll get that stool test,
right,
which doesn't show anything.
Right.
And then they'll go to a gastroenterologist, which will typically do a colonoscopy recommend fiber, reducing stress, things like that.
And the things that I get coming back from that visit is lymphocytic colitis, eosinophilic colitis.
Right.
Just take budesonide and take it forever and a day.
Yeah. So that will reduce the inflammation, but it won't necessarily eliminate the cause of the problem, which could be various things. So a lot of times people have a story like early on in childhood, they couldn't tolerate milk or had a lot of eczema, and they sort of grew out of that, or they had asthma or ear infections as a child. They grew out of that. And then later in life, after a certain sort of traumatic event or an insult to the body like food poisoning, they might develop chronic GI symptoms or other chronic disease like arthritis or something like that. And then, so we'll often do food sensitivity testing for those people.
Sure.
But also, because of the inflammation that they're having, we'll also do stool testing because the gut bacteria usually gets, you know, dysbiotic by that point.
Right. I mean, gut microbiome is really, really important, and paying attention to those healthy bacteria and making sure they stay in the gut, because they prevent the bad bacteria from taking over and causing leaky gut syndrome and everything else that follows from it, is really very critical. So a deeper dive into a stool analysis, looking at much more than just bacteria and blood and ova and parasite, which is a typical GI test that we used to do with stool analysis, is very, very important. And then managing it is a slow process, but nonetheless very, very useful and necessary. So pay attention to this. It's important.
Mm-hmm. We are going to take a quick break and then back more with Dr. Pentland. We're going to find out about things happening for the gut, right? Some new gut information with Dr. Pentland in just a moment. We also have Dr. Michael Gilbert here, all about the eyes, from Northwest Vision Institute, and Dr. Samira Umat here. We have one more hour. Stay right there. And here is that number to get connected. If you have a question today, we are live in the studio at 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.